live show on UK Health Radio, in which I talk to people from the world of integrative medicine for cancer as part of an ongoing exploration of what's working and where science is leading us. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative medicine charity for people with cancer. My guest today is a woman who I find completely inspiring, both for what she's achieved in meeting a very tough diagnosis of cancer and in embracing a very broad view of what recovery can mean and what could be helpful in achieving it. Dr. Lauren McDonald is currently in Bali leading a yoga retreat, and I'm talking to her there over Skype. Hi Lauren, it's taken me much too long to get you on the Yes to Life show. Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure. It's really lovely to finally be connecting with you, Robin.
So, you're a trained doctor with extensive NHS experience. You've had cancer yourself, and you're also a great advocate of integrative medicine. Would you like to start out by telling us about the connection between those three things? Were you always interested in lifestyle approaches, or did your interest result from your own diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely not. It's been a real journey over the last 5 years into kind of the world of integrative medicine, holistic healing, and kind of where I find myself today, which is a lot more focused on healing and really bridging science and spirituality as well. So yeah, if I go back to kind of my education, I was really interested in the kind of human condition, the human experience. So I went on and studied for a psychology degree, ended up working in advertising, and then realized, you know, I was really missing working with humans and really helping people kind of face to face in, you know, regarding health and healing. So I went back to study medicine. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting just because obviously the psychology degree had been very much mind focused, and then the medical degree was very kind of physical body focused.
Yes.
And there wasn't really any overlap between the two, which I was quite interested about just at the time. I was expecting a bit more of the mind-body connection, especially within my medical degree. Mm. And then, yeah, so I was only a junior doctor. I hadn't been long qualified when I was diagnosed with cancer. And that was back in 2014. I was diagnosed, unfortunately it was a misdiagnosis. I went to my GP. I just had that gut feeling that something wasn't right. There was a lump on my leg that hadn't been there. But you know, so often is the case, I was told it's nothing to worry about, you know. And I think really, even though deep down I knew it was something to worry about, sometimes you're just so relieved to hear those words.
Absolutely.
I kind of pushed it to the back of my mind. Yeah. But fast forward 6 months, I did go back to the GP again, and then I was quickly referred to dermatology because I had what then they found on a biopsy was malignant melanoma, which it was one of those diagnoses. I remember being at medical school, there was a few key cancers, you know, pancreatic cancer, ovarian, melanoma. They were the ones that I really thought, oh, I don't want to get one of those.
All right.
And of course, yeah, I go ahead and get a kind of a nodular malignant melanoma, which is also kind of the specific one you definitely don't want to get. So yeah, that's where I was. Kind of that was me in 2014 at the age of 29.
Wow, a major thing. So what kind of impact did that have on you?
So it was really difficult because I'd gone back to uni. I think your 20s are such an important decade anyway. And I was only really just starting to find my feet. I felt a bit behind, you know, my friends and peers were, you know, I'd gone back to study a 5-year degree. So I was already kind of trying to play catch up a little bit. And then obviously this just came out of left field. And, you know, nothing can prepare you for that diagnosis. And I still, you know, I went on over the course of 3 years to actually progress to stage 4. But I still feel that first day, when I heard those words, you've got cancer, especially because I knew it was melanoma. And at the time, obviously, I hadn't had scans to kind of check how far it spread. So yeah, it just absolutely floored me, took the wind out of my sails. And yeah, just, I mean, whenever I think back and just think of the state I was in then, I just feel so sad for myself because also I was at that age where none of my friends had experienced cancer.
Right.
Maybe, you know, mum and dad's friends might have had it, but there was not really anyone I could speak to. Obviously, and I very much looked at cancer from a clinician lens.
Yes.
So, you know, I knew all about the cancer and how to treat it. but actually I, you know, what was missing in my medical education was, you know, the actual human experience of cancer. Mm. So yeah, I got, I definitely got my own education in that sense.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, isn't it? From, as you say, from your point of view, looking at it medically, most people, when they're told they got cancer, cancer largely has achieved this reputation of cancer equals death. So it doesn't really matter what kind it is. You've got cancer, that's the worst thing you could be told. In your case, you actually know about the specific cancers and you know about this particular one, actually. Of course, technically, you know how difficult it is to treat and all the rest of it. So it's like you're not ill-informed like many of the public might be about it, but that information is also quite a thing to take on board.
Yeah, I think initially I thought it was actually a real hindrance, almost knowing too much.
Right.
But actually it turned out, you know, fast forward 6 months and I really pushed. I was basically, you know, I have had a bit of a tricky ride through the NHS, and so even though I'm going to say this, I'm not kind of downplaying how amazing the NHS is, because I wouldn't be alive without the NHS and the amazing treatment I did receive. But, yes. You know, not only had I had a missed GP diagnosis at the beginning, but then I was convinced that the cells had spread to my lymph nodes in my groin.
Yes.
Because, again, I think it's just that intuition. I knew something was wrong.
Hmm.
But I was referred for health anxiety with a psychologist instead.
Right.
And it made me question myself, you know, do I have this health anxiety, or is there something else going on? And fortunately, I think then, because I did have that extra knowledge of, I know how aggressive malignant melanoma is, I know how it likes to travel, you know, there'd been that 6 months where the diagnosis had been missed, that I really, really pushed for an ultrasound scan. Mm. And I think if I hadn't done that, I might not be here today, because I wasn't due another CT scan for 6 months at that point.
Right.
So yeah, it was a bit of a, on one hand, it was a kind of hindrance to know too much. And then I think also it really pushed me to take a bit of kind of push my own care, really, which is a shame you have to do, but you do have to do it sometimes.
You do. And I think, you know, many people have similar stories to tell from a non-medical background of actually informing themselves the best they can, and that using that information to push their own case and it being the right thing.
Yeah, and that's it. And I do understand why they don't want to kind of, you know, doctors and, you know, clinicians don't want to scan everybody. And also, you don't want to fuel people's health anxiety, because also it's such an anxious time.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's just that fine balance, isn't it, between knowing that a patient actually knows their body better than anyone.
Right.
So, yeah, you do have to kind of, it's a fine line to tread. So I do appreciate that.
Right. Okay, so you describe your cancer as stage 4 at that point, and for anyone in doubt, in conventional terms, that means the end stage, when ideas of any sort of cure or lasting remission have been left well behind, and treatment on offer, if any, consists of palliative care to reduce suffering. So I saw you speaking recently in London. I have to say, you don't quite match the picture of an end stage patient. In fact, you seem to be bursting with life. So just interested to hear what you've actually done by way of treatment, both conventional and other, to get where you are today.
So thank you very much, first of all. And yeah, I definitely feel that way. I have got more energy and more life in me than ever. So yeah, it's lovely that you can recognise that. But yeah, going back to where I was, so I had an initial surgery in 2014, and that was followed up by a groin dissection later on that year. And then I had almost a year of kind of being, well, no evidence of disease on my CT scans. But then a later scan showed that I had metastases to my chest wall, my lung, and my adrenal gland.
Right.
So that was the end of 2015 in October. But for anyone who doesn't know, melanoma is the one of the reasons I was so scared of getting that cancer was because chemotherapy, radiotherapy doesn't traditionally work on those tumours.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so worried about it progressing anyway. And then when it did finally become stage 4, there was nothing really there for me. You know, we were looking at clinical trials that could potentially, I was even thinking of flying to America through a friend, a connection we had, to see if I could get onto a trial there.
Right.
Because there really wasn't anything. So it just, things had gone from bad to worse, basically, in 2 years. And I got to the point where, yeah, October 2015, I was referred to the Royal Marsden in London. And gratefully, they did just say to me, look, just sit tight. There's a chance that one of the new immunotherapy drugs is going to be licensed by NICE and then the NHS in January.
Right.
So it was a very difficult Christmas that right, year, where, you know, we just didn't know what was happening. And the tumours, I did have one surgery to remove one of the tumours in my chest wall, the kind of muscle. But 4 weeks later, when I took the bandage off, the surgeon, the plastic surgeon, had suggested I keep it on just for as long as I could to improve the scar and the healing.
Mm.
And I had numerous tumours already. They were growing at such a rate.
Right.
So, yeah, those 3 months, it was pretty scary because, you know, I could visibly see them, and the tumours were kind of collecting blood vessels. So there was a lot of, I could literally look down at my chest and see these lumps with all the vessels on as well.
Yeah.
And that's really, those 3 months, I think, were key for me in terms of, because there wasn't an option for me to have any treatment, I really just had to sit with the situation.
Right.
And prior to that, I'd been very much in kind of fight or flight, survival mode, having a deep knowing that at some point this cancer was going to return, just the nature of melanoma and the fact I'd been a delayed diagnosis at the very start. But yeah, I then just started looking much more at the research, fortunately came across some kind of groundbreaking studies on the gut microbiome. And at that point, I hadn't really heard about the microbiome. It wasn't something we'd been taught at medical school, particularly. It'd been touched on. And specifically, these studies had found that in mice who were treated with immunotherapy, who'd first of all been injected with melanoma cells, but then treated with immunotherapy, it was only the mice who had certain strains of bacteria in their gut that survived.
Right.
And the other mice who'd maybe been treated with antibiotics or they'd had their gut microbiome wiped out died very quickly of the cancer. So I then just spent those 3 months really focusing on nutrition and my gut health. And there was much more, I think, up until that point, although I'd been juicing and eating a plant-based diet, I hadn't really looked at the other aspects of my life that were causing me stress. So that was, yeah, that was really my kind of gateway into integrative medicine. It was during those 3 months.
Very interesting. Yeah, all that material about the gut microbiome and the interaction with drug treatments is fascinating, isn't it? When, I mean, you think of the fact that generally speaking, with chemotherapy, antibiotics are just like, you know, part of the picture. They're, you know, in between chemotherapy treatments. You get an infection, you have lashings of different antibiotics to deal with that because you have no immune defences. And, you know, and that's quite apart from the fact that the chemotherapy itself destroys your microbiome. So to ignore it is, well, it's ignore it at your peril, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think it is difficult, obviously, because antibiotics do have their place and they are needed, especially, you know, in patients who don't have an immune system. But at the same time, you need to make sure that you're replenishing it in other ways through kind of nutrition or probiotics as well. And I think that's the bit that's been missed for so long.
Yes, absolutely. Being proactive about it, yeah. Okay, well, look, I kind of imagine that your state of health must be quite striking to some of your colleagues, particularly maybe your oncologists. Are you winning over any hearts and minds to the cause of integrative medicine from your position within the profession?
I think that's just, fortunately, in the last 5 years, there's been a general shift across medicine. I mean, we've got, you know, lifestyle medicine, functional medicine coming through, and then, you know, integrative oncology. You know, having said that, there's still, you know, doctors like evidence-based medicine, and there's always a bit of delay. You know, even when the gut health studies in the kind of animal models had come out, I went to speak to my oncologist and said, look, I found these studies, I'm going to start taking these probiotics, I'm going to be doing this and this. And at the time, you know, this was 5 years ago, but he did say, look, Lauren, really, I don't think you should go messing with your gut health. There probably is something in it, but we just don't know what yet. So I think that although there's an openness to it, there's also an element of caution, which is, you know, it is important to be cautious. But then I think sometimes we can be overly cautious as doctors as well.
Right.
And for me, as a patient in that moment, you know, I'd read this research and I thought, do you know what, I'm just going to go for it. Because right now, I've only got a 20% chance of responding to this treatment. And I need to give myself the best possible chance. So I think it's, you know, it's good to be informed by what your doctor thinks, but then at the end of the day, it really is your body and your life. So, yeah.
Right.
That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a very good point you make about the caution. Well, you know, if you're in relatively good health, then caution seems completely sensible. If you're at your beam ends, you literally are facing death or don't have many options ahead of you, to be a bit less cautious actually makes complete sense. And particularly when the thing you're being less cautious about is, well, on the whole, you know, it's not a sort of damaging treatment or something. You were looking at improving your health.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I think most of these things, they're kind of integrative approaches through meditation or diet. You know, it's only a positive. It's not, yes. You know, it doesn't have any nasty side effects.
Yeah.
But having said that, you know, there's always the other side as well. And again, I read some research around the time I was kind of focusing on my own gut health that certain patients, I think it was colon cancer, for them, when they added in certain probiotics, it was actually negative and they were less likely to respond to their chemotherapy or immunotherapy, yeah. And you know, again, you know, things like cannabis, I was very open. I was doing so much research into integrative medicine and, you know, I actually bought your book, which is brilliant. It's such a great guide.
Thank you.
But I was looking at cannabis and then found some evidence that actually if you're having immunotherapy, it can potentially stop it being as effective. So it's a real minefield.
It is.
You know, there's so much potential out there, but it's almost getting the right recipe of everything so that it's not interacting and it's not kind of being detrimental, it's not giving side effects. And I think that's really where it needs to go next, because we know we've got all of these amazing tools and strategies and new kind of, well, I say new, it's ancient wisdom often.
Yes.
But it's just about integrating it safely into conventional medicine.
Yeah.
But like you said, when your life is on the line, you know, you're prepared to do anything.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it makes complete sense to take a few risks, or calculated risks, let's say. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So anyone who's got some experience of integration in the USA will realise just how resistant the UK is actually to moving in this direction. And unfortunately, we're rather far behind now. What are your thoughts on why this is, what the differences are between the two countries, and what we can do to accelerate change in this direction in the UK?
I think there's been some really great training programs in America. You know, Andrew Weil has had his integrative medicine training for doctors and healthcare professionals for years now.
Yes.
And there's a lot of other kind of eminent doctors who've been really at the forefront of integrative medicine. And also not only just kind of talking about it, but actually researching and studying it and showing that the outcomes are really positive. And we're just a little bit behind. We don't really have that training, you know. I wanted to train in integrative medicine and there wasn't really, you know, I did find there's the one that's under the Bristol Cancer Centre. But other than that, it's, you know, it's a very small diploma and there's a very small cohort every year. So it's really, you know, the doctors don't have the training in this country. So it's difficult to, you know, and also, you know, there's an element of ignorance as well. You know, you can't share and teach what you don't know and what you haven't learned at medical school. And I think, you know, it's what's great is the more colleagues and friends have seen me go through my experience with cancer and everything that's helped me, a lot more people seem to be open to it. We obviously met at True Fields Festival this summer and again last summer, and it's so wonderful to see, you know, not just patients there but actually medical colleagues as well who are interested in learning about
Absolutely.
This integrative approach.
Yes.
And again, not just for curing, but for healing. And that's, again, something that's not really been taught at all. We don't have that element of healing in our conventional system, at least in the UK.
No, that's true. It's a big gap. And I think integration is the fast track to actually getting it in there. I think it's you know, it's all out there ready to happen as integration happens. It's not like new territory, it's just territory that needs to be embraced.
Yeah, and like you say, I think there's been a lot of resistance in terms of some doctors thinking it's a bit woo-woo. I mean, yeah. I really don't like using that term, but, you know, that's quite often what any of this kind of mind-body-spirit kind of approach to medicine quite often evokes. Yeah. And it's just changing that kind of mindset for doctors. And, you know, equally saying to them, you know, this is safe. We're not saying throw out conventional medicine. Right. For only alternatives, you know, we're saying let's combine them to give patients the best possible chance of cure, but also, yeah, experiencing this deep healing that's so important and which can also lead to kind of supporting a cure.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I completely agree. So you're on a bit of a mission to share some of what you've learned about the potential of integrative medicine, both during treatment and as central to a meaningful recovery. Can we start out by talking about the treatment phase? All too often I hear people say something along the lines of, well, I'll get my surgery and radiotherapy over first and then I can start looking into lifestyle. To me, this is to completely miss the incredible potential of integration to make treatment a lot less grueling and damaging, make it far more likely to succeed. What are your thoughts of this, about integration during treatment?
I mean, I think it's so important. And again, I don't know whether it's just because I'm a real geeky researcher, but, you know, I think most people who are diagnosed with cancer, the first thing they look for is how they can help themselves, because you're so powerless. You're looking for an element of control, and diet and nutrition is quite often the first thing that people come to, right. Which is, I you know, it's the key foundation, the building block. And that's exactly what I did. I started juicing regularly, I started taking key supplements, I started having a plant-based diet from the minute I was diagnosed.
Right.
And the only thing for me is I was obviously then, you know, I did progress, you know, stage by stage over the years.
Yes.
And I did lose a little bit of faith in, you know, I knew it was still good for me and it was making me feel better. But at the beginning, I thought, you know, I can really potentially cure this with just, you know, changing my diet.
Right.
And I ended up being vegan for a year and being really strict and denying myself lots of kind of pleasures. And then I kind of was like, oh, sod this. I'm going to go, you know, I'm just going to enjoy myself for a while. And now stage four, I'm just going to release that element of control, because that was actually stressing me out a little bit as well, which obviously is just not good for the body.
A lot of people do that.
So then I just found a happy medium. You know, I'm not solely plant-based. I see the value in occasionally having some fish or occasionally having some grass-fed meat, you know, not often. And I don't really have much dairy or gluten, but it was just, I've released the kind of pressure I was putting myself under, really, mm-hmm. to juice twice a day. And I think that's another thing. Everyone finds their own equilibrium eventually, but I think initially you definitely go, well, not everybody. A lot of people I know seem to have gone extreme with the kind of nutrition and diet at the beginning. So I think it's really important starting there, but then just being aware that that's not the only thing you can do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much kind of in terms of when you're first diagnosed, I was just in that fight or flight. I actually was in the freeze state. So when you're really, you know, under this chronic stress, you quite often go into fight or flight. But there's that other element, which is the freeze, which is the numbing.
Right.
And for a long time, I felt very numb. And for me, part of my kind of healing and getting better and looking after myself, reducing inflammation, improving my immune system really came from shifting from that state into more of a kind of parasympathetic healing state. And I just did that through yoga, meditation, lots of time spent walking in nature, spending time with friends and family. And it's all of that kind of side that also needs to come straight away, really early on, I believe. And it's so hard because obviously you're so constricted and you're so scared. So it's hard to kind of open up and try and relax. But, you know, there's so much evidence and science now showing that, you know, the body can self-heal when it's in the parasympathetic state. And yeah, it often takes a long time to finally be able to move into that state, especially when you're going through something as huge as cancer.
Mm. Yeah, it certainly is a challenge to embrace all that early on. And of course, some people don't even want to go there anyway. They're normally averse to that kind of introspection, if you like, and lack of control or letting go.
It can be really scary to slow down. I know I was definitely on kind of, I was speeded up, if anything. You know, I was rushing around doing bucket list holidays and almost I wanted to be distracted at the beginning because just sitting with that fear and that pain was too much.
Mm-hmm.
So whether, you know, whether it's not we get something we can help patients to experience earlier on, or whether it is just, you know, a journey that people have to go on themselves and to get to that place of kind of peace and surrender and trust. But I know that my biggest kind of healing and awakening and everything that I've kind of experienced at a later date all came from just sitting with it and really just exploring what I'd gone through and not running away from it anymore.
Mm. Great. Well, look, that's something I want to come back to in a minute. So we'll hold that thought. So there's a few headline reasons why the cancer treatment statistics are generally so poor in the UK. And if anybody listening is in any doubt, we are actually at the very bottom of the league table of developed nations at the moment, despite the fact that we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. But you've already mentioned one of the most acknowledged reasons that we're there is our inability to diagnose correctly and in a timely manner. That's well recognised, and we could easily make a whole show just talking about that. But another is the complete absence of any strategies to sustain remission. Beyond that is the kind of permanent prescriptions for hormone-controlling drugs with all the attendant side effects. Thinking about the matter of survival alone, what, if anything, do you think that lifestyle medicine integration has to offer in that area?
I think when you come out, and I can't speak for every patient, but I'm just speaking for myself here. But when I was kind of spat out the other end, if you like, so I, you know, I'm really grateful. I've been in remission now for just over 3 years, and I finished treatment 18 months ago. But there was that, and I'm sure, you know, lots of people experience this, where you kind of, you do get, you know, you suddenly your appointments stop, your CT scans might go down to 3 months or 6 months, but you just don't have, it's just a really strange time, place to navigate, because, you know, everyone around you is celebrating, you know, if that's the case. And, you know, I know a lot of people are living with cancer kind of as a chronic disease now, but for me, obviously, I was really grateful. I kind of had no evidence of disease on my scans, and yet I felt absolutely broken.
Right.
It had been such an intense kind of 4 years of my life, and although, you know, I'd learned lots of skills and tools, and I'm really interested in lifestyle medicine and functional medicine, but it's one thing to know it, and then it's another to put it into practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what would be brilliant is if you know, I know there's some brilliant charities around, yours included, and there are, you know, we've got some great kind of things going on, but it's just that community and support and accountability to also help people to, you know, make sure they carry on eating well and exercising. You know, exercise is I think the number one thing you can do to help prevent, you know, keep yourself in remission. But it's being motivated as well. It's almost like it would be brilliant if we had, I don't know, cancer coaches, to not only provide patients with community and support, but also that kind of accountability.
Yeah, it's you're talking about ongoing support and community, really, aren't you? Which is, it's potentially such an isolating disease, and such a mountain on people's plates to deal with psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, every single way.
Yeah, and that's it. I think we're so focused on the physical and the emotional, mental, spiritual side of things generally just gets ignored. You know, I would never had anybody ask me how I was actually feeling, how was I really doing.
Right.
I was never offered any counselling or therapy through the NHS system. And I just think it should be part and parcel. Anybody who gets a diagnosis, that should just be a funnel that happens straight away. You know, you speak to somebody and you're really asked, you know, how are you really feeling? Because so often you can just say, yeah, I'm fine. But that's actually because, you know, I think you're a bit shell-shocked and you're in survival mode, but it's just having someone to really sit with you and question, how are you really?
Yeah. All right. Well, can we come back round to the topic that you've mentioned already, and I know you're particularly passionate about, this is the transformative potential of a serious illness like cancer. Many people think about cancer treatment as all about getting back to their normal lives, somehow as if everything was fine before. Well, I've talked to a lot of people who've had cancer, and it seems the truth is that normal gets utterly destroyed by cancer. And people are kind of faced with a choice of either staggering on, wishing it had never happened, or embracing the fact of their diagnosis and allowing it to change them irrevocably, which is what you were describing, I think, earlier. So would you tell us about the effect that cancer's had on you in this way?
So yeah, this is a topic I'm really passionate about. And I, for me personally, cancer obviously came, you know, at a time when I was just trying to get my life together. Everything was a bit up in the air, and then it just knocked me sideways.
Right.
And for a long time, I really resented it because not only was I petrified I was going to die, but, you know, I was watching people around me kind of getting married, having babies, moving on with their careers. And I was just, I'd moved back, I was 30, I'd moved from Brighton, where I'd been living for 10 years, back to Devon to live with my mum and dad. I was really isolated, you know, my parents were there, but I'd just lived in Brighton for 10 years and I didn't really know anybody, you know, in Devon anymore. So kind of on a very physical kind of environmental level, cancer, you know, turned my life upside down. And then obviously career, you know, I did actually return to work between my surgeries, but I didn't want to be there. I was spending so much time in the hospital as a patient anyway, that then returning and having to put on the kind of doctor identity was what I found really challenging.
I imagine.
The actual role, you know, I think because things were shifting in me and I was coming to understand more about kind of getting to the root cause of disease and kind of the idea, the difference between healing and curing. And then I just wasn't seeing any of this at work. So I think it really changed how I viewed, you know, I'd worked so hard to become a doctor, and then suddenly I was actually questioning, is this actually what I want to be doing? Is this my path? So again, that kind of caused me a lot of turmoil. And, you know, at the time though, obviously the cancer and getting better was my main focus. I wasn't kind of hugely focused on career or anything by any means. But yeah, it just threw everything up in the air, and it's taken a long time to get to a point of being truly grateful for everything that's happened to me. And I'm so happy to say I am there now.
Right.
I really view kind of these challenges and adversity that we go through as an opportunity to heal and awaken. And, you know, I mean, last year I was hit by a car. You know, you think that lightning doesn't strike twice. You know, yeah. I thought I'd just managed to get through cancer. Hopefully, you know, I don't want to say survive, but, you know, I've been in remission for 3 years, so things were looking good. And then, yeah, I get hit by a car, end up in a wheelchair for 4 months, on crutches for 6 months. It's been a really slow recovery. And again, you know, fortunately this time I was able to draw on all of the skills and knowledge I'd gained and actually use it as a kind of portal into deeper kind of healing and awakening. And I did that through, you know, I was sitting on the sofa, I couldn't move really, so I was got really into meditation and breath work and journaling, and it was really interesting because these were kind of things I hadn't explored when I was on a much faster pace. You know, I must survive, I must get through this. It really, it's interesting, you know, I have definitely become more spiritual during the last kind of 5 years, but I did feel like it was the universe's way of saying, look, just slow down, just really, really stop and take stock of where you are and just go a little bit deeper. So yeah, I managed to get through it relatively. I mean, it wasn't the funnest of 6 months, but it is interesting. And I definitely think that perspective is everything, isn't it? If I was sitting on the sofa, really miserable, letting myself kind of sink more, you know, I was low, my mood was low for a few weeks, but I think if I'd have just stayed in that state, that wasn't going to help me in any way. So it was just a perspective change, which is easier said than done, and takes some work.
Right, it does. So the ingredients of what you're talking about, I mean, when you first mentioned it, you were talking about the fact that it was a kind of, I can't remember the exact word you used, but a sort of acceptance of your situation at some level, which you hadn't happened before. Is that correct? Of if you like, the doorway?
Yeah, I think a kind of surrender.
Right. Yeah, so this is very important, isn't it? Because, you know, that is a kind of doorway to change, to actually changing your relationship to a extremely difficult and horrible situation.
Yeah, definitely. And it took a long time for me to get there. And I think, you know, tied in with, you know, a really kind of class idea of surrender, really in with the kind of the more spirit aspect of human experience. So, you know, the kind of self-compassion and the intuition and the really listening to your body's wisdom. Really, that's for me, yeah, kind of trusting and surrendering to a higher power and, you know, what will be on a level. You know, having said all that, it's so important to do what we can to support our health and healing. But there's only so much we can do.
Right. So this is there's a saying that used to be around quite a bit at one time, I remember, which was trust in Allah, but tie your camel well, which maybe sums up what you're saying.
Exactly. That sounds great.
Yeah. So it would be thoroughly patronising for people who haven't experienced the intense difficulties of cancer themselves to bang on about the silver lining in a cancer diagnosis. You know, this could easily and quite reasonably elicit some furious responses, I think, from people with cancer. But I feel that the authentic inspiration of people like you is actually desperately needed, as without its transformative potential, cancer is the bleakest of places to be. So you're out there clearly doing all you can to get the word out. What more do you think can be done to help inspire people to another way forward?
I think it's difficult because, as you said, it's everyone's unique and you're on a unique journey, and by no means can you push this kind of idea of it being an opportunity for growth or expansion on anybody. I just say to people, don't push yourself to try and feel that way. You know, you feel what you feel, and with time, just stay curious and see if you get to a place where you can start to notice some positives in it. And you know, I don't want you to think that I'm saying it's great, I'm really happy that it's happened to me. You know, there's been so many things. You know, I was really looking forward to having children, and you know, there's lots of things I've had to deal with.
Yes.
So it's not all roses. It's not a bed of roses, but yeah, I just say reach out and tell people how you're feeling, and definitely seek support. Community is so important, and then hopefully these services. You know, there's definitely more. On one level, we're being squeezed. You know, financially, the services are being shut down and squeezed. But then, you know, there's more kind of amazing charities that are picking up the slack to provide people with this kind of this bridge between science and spirituality, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned two things. What I was thinking. One, I noticed you said, really, you're encouraging people not to slap on a layer of some idea of what cancer should be like on top of the actual experience, you know, that I must be positive, that kind of nonsense, which it does get bandied around. You're telling people to
I mean, that is my absolute pet hate, is when people, you
right.
know,
yeah.
people are trying, friends and family are trying to be supportive and say the right thing, but you know, there is nothing worse than hearing stay positive.
Yeah,
like, you know, those kind of comments, because you know, you can't just stay positive. It exactly, it's like slapping on a plaster, but actually underneath you're bleeding. So
that's completely unrealistic, and there's no getting away from the fact that cancer is not a picnic anyway. It's definitely not a nice thing, but it also doesn't deny the fact that good things can come out of a bad situation, which we can stop that from happening. I think we have the power to keep things bad with using our thinking, you know, very often. But if we can allow it, good things can almost always come from bad situations, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so as you mentioned at the beginning, I'm actually in Bali at the moment, so we're having this discussion across the world. But I'm, you know, I was actually on my scooter this morning going through the rice paddy fields with a huge smile on my face, thinking, how on earth did I get here, you know? And it really is due to having such a massive curveball thrown at me. You know, I was on course to start my psychiatry training and really go down that career route, very much within conventional medicine. And now I'm here, I'm about to co-host my first yoga and kind of wellness retreat next week with a friend who I met on my yoga teacher training a few years ago. And I am returning to my training, psychiatry, but with a very different lens, very much kind of wanting to work as a holistic psychiatrist. And it's just really interesting. There's that famous Steve Jobs quote, isn't there, which I absolutely love, which is, you cannot connect the dots looking forward. And when I was in the thick of everything and it was so painful and it was so messy and I didn't know if I was going to survive and I was so numb for so long. And then just to fast forward to today, kind of in these rice paddy fields, feeling so grateful really for everything that's happened to me and everything that's brought me to this point and everything I've learned along the way. I never thought I'd get to this point. So, yeah.
Amazing. What a great story. And you're right about that quote. It's brilliant because so often people make the mistake of thinking that their happiness is bound up with being certain about what their future holds. When, of course, the reality is that you're never certain about what your future holds. And accepting that reality.
Well, as illustrated by me being hit by a van last year, you know, the quote goes, you could be hit by a bus tomorrow. So who knows what's around the next corner for any of us, you know, cancer aside, anything can happen to any of us at any point.
Yeah. So curiously enough, it seems to be almost, it's the inverse, is that actually happiness is based on accepting the fact that you don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I think so. And it's that dealing with uncertainty, which again, when things were so uncertain, when I wasn't sure if I was going to have access to immunotherapy and I knew these tumours were growing, it's really difficult to sit in that space of, I don't know what's going to happen here, you know. It's really difficult and I don't want to downplay it in any way because it's been a really difficult ride to get to where I am today. And obviously, you know, I don't know what's going to around the corner either. I'm very fortunate to have enjoyed 3 years, no evidence of disease, but these drugs are so new. The kind of five-year data has just recently come out, but, you know, melanoma specifically is a really sneaky cancer and it could potentially come back at any time. So I think part of where I'm at and just in terms of survivorship, which we talked about earlier, is, again, just living kind of day-to-day mindfully. But having said that, you know, for a long time, I wouldn't plan anything beyond 3 months. Because that's how my CT scans were. And I think I noticed last year that I was starting to say to people, you know, people's wedding invitations or maybe holiday plans, I was pushing it to 6 months and then to 9 months and then finally to 12 months. And now I've just opened up again. But again, that's taken time. And that just happened really subconsciously. I didn't even realise I'd started putting things in the calendar for next year. And it was so nice to be able to do that because so long, you know, on one level, it's so important to live mindfully and day to day. And then, you know, it's also quite difficult when you are living scan to scan as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that is one of the first things to go with a cancer diagnosis, isn't it? Is this kind of confidence in life. You know, suddenly goes from seeming quite solid to being something that's just hanging on a thread. And so for you, that's a big thing that you find yourself actually putting things in the calendar next year, because it actually reflects the fact that you regained confidence in life, which, again, it doesn't necessarily mean anything about how long your life is going to be, but it does mean something about the way you're living.
I think what was interesting as well is I actually noticed, I just wanted to come back a little bit to the difference between healing and curing.
Thank you, yeah.
Because I did actually notice that I'd started to make plans, just, you know, not hugely ahead of time, but a little bit more, while I actually had these pretty nasty big tumours that I could see. And I just really understood that I was experiencing a level of healing at that point. So, you know, I didn't know if the tumours were going to go. I didn't know if I was going to die, but I was, because I'd started to look at the other kind of facets, the kind of bringing in meditation and mindfulness and just all the things that we all know that we should be doing day to day, but quite often don't. And it really helped me to just experience this peace that I hadn't had for years. And this was despite not being cured. Because I think so often when you have cancer, you think I will only feel better, or I will only feel kind of calm and safe in my body again once I'm cured.
Right.
But it was really fascinating for me to kind of experience this feeling safe again in my body. I think that came a lot from my yoga practice, and that's why I went off and trained as a yoga teacher, because I was just fascinated that I was finally feeling safe again in my body despite these tumours.
So that was just
really interesting.
It's really interesting. And of course, these two things are not separate to each other. The healing and the curing are not separate to each other. They might not be the same thing. You just don't know. But of course, how you are feeling about your life and, you know, how it seems to you, of course, does affect your health as well, you know, and vice versa. So they're definitely interconnected, these two things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's evidence that your beliefs, your thoughts, they really can change your physiology. So yes. Whilst we're not saying be positive, you know, fake your positivity, right. But if you can... Right. Just sit with it and try and shift yourself, you know, just gratitude or joy, you know, really experience that sunrise or that sunset and let those feelings kind of influence the physiology of your body.
Fantastic. It's been really fascinating. Enormously inspiring to have a doctor like you on the show talking directly about the topics that we covered today, topics that are so close to the heart of so many people with cancer. I'm really grateful you come on. We're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. But thank you very much, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me.
I do hope you found that interesting and enjoyable. As I mentioned last week, I'm excited to confirm that the Yes to Life conference is now back in the calendar on the 21st of March 2020, and early bird discount bookings are now open. Just go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, yestolife.org.uk, and follow the links from the homepage. The topic of the conference, once again, is Nutritional Science and Cancer, Exploring the Increasing Consensus and the Unanswered Contradictions. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. I shall be back at the same time next week with another guest from the world of integrative medicine and cancer. So I do hope you can listen again here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.